All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show, and I can't actually believe he's made it in. It's Brendan Devaney. Hi, Brendan.
Yeah, Greg. I can't believe it myself. It was a bit of a rough night, yeah. I was led astray.
Come here. No, but we'll get the names of the people that led
Thank
you astray.
You,
yeah. The
we'll out them.
The
we'll out them.
Guido Sean McCool's Oisin Gallen. He is the star of the future. He's the star of now.
Yeah.
But who's to say what success he might bring to his club and to his county? And he'll be kicking himself and the rest of the team too to be on the losing side.
Yeah. He was unbelievable. Yeah, I was speaking to him yesterday at McCool Park at the Niamh Connell Unions game. Lovely fella, you know, along with it, Greg, really, really down to earth. What a player for McCool's. What a man they have around the club for people they look up to and aspire to. And listen, every game, Greg, he just keeps doing it and doing it. And I mean, he almost took McCool's into a county final. And of course, listen, it's no disrespect to the rest of the team. Everybody plays a part. But I mean, when you have somebody of his talent, I mean, Jim McGuinness was there looking on, and I'm sure he's thinking, this guy is absolutely golden to have someone like him in our ranks as well. Of course, for Donegal coming in the next season, it's going to be massive.
But it was Guido's day and new manager delivering success. What's it, the first final in 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, 4 or 5 years. I think it's since a trilogy with Niamh Connolly. We're also champions, and champions going into that. And they had those finals won in different games, but Niamh Connolly, as we know, as they've kept proving since, are never beaten until that final whistle blows, and they managed to come through that one. So you kind of thought at that point, Greg Guido, particularly after winning Ulster, and that, you know, they had a brilliant under 21 team, you were thinking that they're going to be thereabouts every year. So they dropped off a small bit, so it's big for them to be back. Ronan McNeely's doing a brilliant job there, Francie Freeland coaching, and you know, they're missing players too, Greg. They've quite a few players emigrated this season, so it was actually a tough season for them. So the fact they've guided them there, county final is brilliant. There's people talking about flying people back in from far flung places. I think that's a bit of a long shot. I know it isn't that long ago Cian Mulligan left, who's one of their best forwards. So it's a pity he's away now. Whether that's a possibility or not, Greg, remains to be seen.
They're going to play Niamh Connell, but you know, St Union's fans, I don't know about the team themselves, might be kicking themselves that it's not St Union's that's going to be contesting that final.
Well, I suppose if you think of it, Greg, it's Niamh Connell deserved to win the game. You know, when you're playing a team that's as well coached as them, you know, I spoke to Martin Regan after. There's interviews from all the managers over the weekend. I spoke to them all. That's all up on this HighlandRadio.com. You know, Niamh Connell are so well coached. They're so good at what they do, and they play a game plan, Greg. And yesterday they played it pretty perfectly. You know, I mean, in terms of going forward, I mean, one wide in the game is absolutely phenomenal shooting. I mean, Union's at 10 or 11. I think they had 11 in the match. So one wide, you know, 12 shots, 11 points. So every time they went forward, you know, they made use of what they were doing. The points were top class. They've got some seasoned players in there. They don't give up the ball cheaply. And if you're going to be Union's and take on a side like that, you have to, your game has to be perfect. And the amount of possession Union's give away yesterday, cheap possession, dropping balls, poor passes. And then when they get forward, Union's is a wide count, but was huge. Now, people say they were under a bit of pressure for that, which is fair enough. But that side of your game has to be perfect, and Union's were far from it yesterday. Listen, Niamh Connell, even though, Greg, you've only 2 points in the end of that game, that Niamh Connell were in complete control in that game.
Yeah. And there was a gear if needed.
Well, you know, for me, looking at it, say, if I'm thinking football, I think Niamh Connell could have overran Unions in the second half if they'd have wanted, but they don't never seem to want to do that. They just sit. Now, people at the match will say neutrally, you know, not a great game of football. They're never exciting kind of games. They're exciting in small bits, of course. Teams are on the break or different things. It's not a great game of football. But I mean, there's Niamh Connell, 7 finals in a row. It's record-breaking stuff. They're by far.
But there was more on it on the line, wasn't there, than the place in the final, obviously avenging last year's final defeat. And yeah. Maybe that's why it all bowled over. But
yeah, I think from the group game, there was a few fists thrown at the end of that. I think that caused a bit of kick up. It wasn't nice to see. And, you know, I think from Niamh Connell's perspective, having been in that position, if you're in a semi-final and a row breaks out, you don't want anything to do with that, because you could get suspended for a final. So I think, you know, the biggest thing for them was probably try and get out of the way of that. And but that, I think, came from the group game was very, there was a lot of nastiness going on, Greg, which isn't nice to see.
So there's no secret then really as to how Niamh Connell will set up for the final. Presumably they go in as favourites. So what has to be done? What do Guido have to do to beat this machine then?
Well, this is it, Greg. It's a thing most people haven't been able to come up with the goods in terms of going around it. I mean, if you think back to that trilogy game, Gidor were probably one of the best Gidor teams ever, and they still at times looked like they were going to open up, but Niamh Connell hang in and hang in there. This time, Niamh Connell are coming in there with absolute complete confidence. Big Gavin McBride went off the Gidor full forward the last day. The word is he's going to miss the game as well. So listen, it's a huge ask. People talk about finals and things happen in finals, but not when you're as tactically set up as Niamh Connell. They tend not to happen.
Yeah.
So listen, for Guidor on the ball, managing to open up space, and when you get inside that 45, you cannot give the ball away. You either got to get a man off the shoulder, you got to win a free, or you got to make possession that you can get a shot away, and then you got to take your chances.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do now. Even McGee's inside, you know, if they had a big Gavin as well, there's probably a platform for a long ball in, which people talk about. But there's always extra numbers there for Niamh Connell. If it breaks, more than likely it's going to break the defender. So this is the conundrum. You have to be very good with runners coming from deep, coming off the shoulder, movement in your forward line. But as I say, I would say, is there a better team, not only probably in Ulster, maybe in Ireland, a better team than Niamh Connell at doing what they do? And that's why I say they've been so successful.
Yeah, indeed. And it's going to be an interesting game. And a lot of it will be, you know, you'll hear commentary, the underdog's tackle suit, suit Guidor. And yes, as a former player, you've been in a lot of dressing rooms, a lot of big games. You've been the favourites going into some games, the underdogs into others. Explain to me how the underdog label suits the team.
Yeah, it used to be a thing from years ago. I think I go back to what you were saying about tactics, you know, on the day. You know, people come out with this wild championship bite and they just go at the other team and you'll see a drop off maybe in performance from a team. But because Niamh Connell play so tactically, you generally get a similar type of performance week in, week out, every game they play. So on the day, maybe doesn't count that much. That said, two seasons ago, I think the final at Unions won, Niamh Connell didn't really turn up that day. It was a very unusual performance from them. So Guidor will be relying or hoping that there's maybe a bit of drop in their performance like that. But really, Greg, this comes down to Guidor playing out of their skin, taking every chance that they can going forward. And the underdog tag, I know Niamh Connell, people say they don't like going in as favourites. That season, for example, that final I'm talking about, Niamh Connell were favourites going in. And I know a few of the people remarked to me that they don't like that. But, you know, I talked to Niamh Connell people before the game and after it, you know, around Ball Buffet yesterday, you know, you see the same people all the time supporting, they're up about, you know, and they're happy they're in a final again. And Martin Regan, his interviews, I say, up on the site, and I was just saying about the time that he's put in and his family, the Niamh Connell. I mean, it's unbelievable, you know, in terms of dedication to the club.
Some questions and messages, texts coming in. Do you think that the main narrative, not by you, up until now around the Niamh Connell team has been that they were a good team but won county semi-finals mainly through sheer doggedness and grit and didn't get genuine credit?
Yeah, there is that argument to it, Greg. I think from neutral's perspective, you see, because the game isn't that exciting and is played in a certain way, it probably doesn't live long in the memory in terms of maybe football matches. You know, in terms of, as I said to you yesterday, Niamh Connell, I think, could have won the game by far more. And the second half could have really went at St. Unions because I think when they went forward, Unions couldn't stop them. But they just sit and they're happy enough to win games again. So some people then maybe don't remember the games as much. I think that's probably, that's a neutral kind of narrative in it there. But I mean, I don't think, obviously it doesn't bother them. They're just happy to keep winning. That's what they're doing.
Do you think Guidor will be dangerous in the final? They're live opposition, like.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose the big one for them, Dara Buil coming back from holidays. I think he might have cut it a bit short as well. The SOS went out to him. He was in Bali or somewhere like that. He came back and of course, Evergreen, Eamon McGee and Neil McGee are in their backbone in the team. So the Ghidorah have a good mix of experience in that, and you've seen it against maybe McCool's the last time. McCool's a very young team. Ghidorah a bit better on the ball, finding range. Ethan Harkin had a great game for them, which is a big plus going in the forward line. He had 1-5, I think. So, you know, there are a lot of plus points going in, but, Greg, they're definitely going in as big underdogs.
Someone said to me, and it wasn't off the game that you just mentioned there, but someone said it. In fact, this has been mentioned to me twice. Interesting to get your views on it. That the game that... I don't know how to phrase this. That young players maybe have been held back a little bit because, you know, some stalwarts haven't hung up their boots.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, listen.
I'm trying to phrase this carefully, right? That the progression, the younger players, the super talented younger players are not necessarily getting the chances or the progression that they possibly would because there are, you know, a few players in different teams that are hanging on.
Well, do you know what? Listen, if you're good enough, they used to say, are you good enough, you're young enough?
Sometimes you're on name and reputation, though.
Yeah. Well, you still have to put it in. Yeah. You know, okay. A manager's going to pick you if you're good enough to play, regardless of age, you know, and that's young or old. So there probably is an aspect of that in certain teams, but if you look at people, talking about Niamh Connell there, I mean, Thompson and McLuhan and these boys just keep churning it out, yeah. Brendan McDyer and all these guys. They keep playing away. They're still contributing to the team, and I'm sure Martin Regan, if he had a younger guy in there, was going to do a better job, then he would be on the pitch.
Yeah, all right. I'm a St. Unans woman too. Best team won. Well done, Niamh Connell. Unans not playing football. Too many players dictating. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Yeah, it's a difficult proposition. I often hear people saying, don't be going over and back the ball. If you have 15 players inside the 45 and they're well coached and they're good footballers, you have to at times go over and back. Like, there is no easy method to get through a packed blanket defence, and that's just how it is.
St. Unions must be disappointed, says another listener. They didn't know what to do yesterday. The game was there for the winning, but there was no change in plan in the second half.
Listen, there's no kind of magic formula to take this. As I was saying to you before, that is about trying to get incisive, trying to beat one man, trying to get an overlap, trying to get somebody in around the back. Unions did do that, Greg. The shots were coming. They just didn't go over the bar. Right, but there was a feeling, right? There was still a feeling that it just wasn't going to happen. Yeah, you know.
How come Unions didn't change their way from last year and practice long kicks?
Yeah, this is it, Greg. There is an opportunity. There would be more of an opportunity, I think, to put the ball in long. But if you look at it at the end, what it was referenced to Unions Day, there was an attempt to put the ball in for a possible goal chance at the end, and the ball went outside the right of the goals and wide. Leo McLuhan just let it run past him. I thought that summed up Unions Day. We couldn't even kick the ball into the 5 yard for a flick in, and it was just kind of like that summed up today.
Yeah. Brendan Kilcoyne and John Gilday is going to be on the show tonight with Brendan. That's the DL debate after 7 to review all of the weekend's action. A lot went on, and also a big weekend next weekend, junior and intermediate finals as
yeah,
well.
We've got interviews from the guys. It was a wee bit of a preview yesterday in the park, up in McCool Park upstairs. And but just how times change, isn't that? I was speaking to McCool's secretary. I was like, what's the story of the bar? The bar wasn't opening that. He says, people don't come up anymore. And I remember, you're on about like years gone by myself, there was always wild crack in the bar upstairs and that. We went up for something to eat then up the road in the Villa Rose, and there was only a few people about, a few Niamh Connell people. I was getting a bit of a touch, of course, which is fine. My wee boys running about in the Unions jersey. I said, you trash, we put a tracksuit top on them. When we go up here, I'm going to get too much stick. But, you know, I was just saying the change in times, Greg. There was always a wild crowd about everywhere. And he's saying people don't come up anymore. I didn't know this at all. But up there, it was a bit of a preview. Declan Boner was there. And a great story from Mavell. Pat McLaughlin and Johnny Quigg were there. Two soccer men. Quigg, you would have played with me at Harps. They came in and took the Mavell team, the GAA team. And Quiggy never nothing to do with GAA his life. And he was training the team. Brilliant. So it's a great story there in the final. I mean, Narasa, Declan Bunner's Narasa, and then Malin and Downen. So we talked to Kevin Cookie Gallagher and Michael Byrne. So that'll be all in
the
show.
Do you want to call
them? Oh, difficult, Greg. Oh, I have a wee bit of a sneak for Malin, sorry, Cookie, in the intermediate, and Narasa.
You're going to be launching that boat in Malin, are you?
The Rossa.
Do you want to review Rossa, that?
Listen. I better watch.
Wouldn't be hard to block that slip and downings, boy.
Hey, people do get sensitive, Greg, all right? This stuff, I always be surprised at that, but yeah. What are you saying about
it? Anyway, so listen, the big weekends just keep coming and coming and coming. It's fantastic stuff. There's so much to go through tonight. Brendan Kilcoyne, John Gilday, and all the voices you'd expect to hear ahead of the next week's action, the junior and intermediate finals as well for next week. It's all on from 7, Brendan.
That's it.
And it's all thanks to Sister Sarah's there, yep, supporting the show.
Well done, your ward. You're looking good in the old penguin suit, boys.
Very much indeed.
Scrub up well.
So you're a winner, Brendan. A winner. Perfect, unlike St. Union's
yesterday. The knives are coming on. You better watch it. The text line will be flipped.
Between that and hard as nails, 35-year-old defenders looking to kick the crap out of me. Thanks very much indeed. Looking forward to that. By the way, it's live for you after 7. It's a cracking show, the DL Debate. There's people from all over the county and country that listen to it because they enjoy the presentation and the conversation, and also previewing next weekend's action as well. That's all with Brendan Devaney.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And we're joined on the programme now by Marie Duffy, Communications Officer with Mental Health Ireland. Good morning, Marie. How are you?
Morning, Greg. How's things?
Good. And a difficult weekend for you and for so many people, for all of us, really. Obviously, being a Chrysler native, it's just so sad, isn't it? And it's still so sad.
Yeah, I guess this was a very difficult weekend for lots of people in Chrysler, and not just Chrysler, people all over Donegal. We know that we had people all over the world thinking of us this weekend. And I guess for a lot of people, the first anniversary is always going to be the toughest. But in one way, we're kind of glad that it's been marked now. But of course, it's still early days in people's kind of recovery.
Yeah, and as I said, when we were having the conversation last week, it's different for everyone. Everyone's different and everyone has their own journey and experience. Thanks for reference that, Marie. October 10th, tomorrow, is World Mental Health Day, but Mental Health Ireland is effectively stretching it out to Mental Health Month. Talk to us about that, Marie.
Yeah, so every year, October 10th is World Mental Health Day. And this year and last year, Mental Health Ireland have decided to extend the day to a whole month of celebration around wellbeing and mental health. And we have events all over the country. We're raising awareness about mental health. We want people talking about mental health. There's often a lot of questioning around awareness months and awareness days and if they work. The research tells us that they do work and they help reduce stigma. They get people talking about mental health, and that's what we want. We want the average person having a conversation with their friends, their family, their neighbours, talk about mental health and slowly chipping away at that stigma.
And that's what it is, isn't it, Marie? Because we are making progress, but we've an awful long way to go. We certainly couldn't sit back now and say, right, the stigma no longer exists and people feel as free to talk about an issue with their mental health as they might a twisted ankle. We're still a long, long away from that because people will be afraid that they'll be judged by others.
Yeah, we've made huge strides around mental health stigma over the past few years, but we have a very long way to go. We know that people are still scared to talk to their friends or family about their mental health. We know that they're afraid to come out in their workplaces and speak to managers and about mental health, about mental illness, about anything like that. We are getting better. And even the small conversations really help. I know a lot of people think, I'm only one person, what can I do? But even just sharing the message tomorrow on your social media throughout the month of October, every little conversation does help. Mm-hmm. And as I said, it's about chipping away. We won't do it all tomorrow or even this month, but if we make a small start, it's something.
Yeah, and also too, it's about maintaining our mental health or recognising if we have a mental health issue that's impacting on our lives, but we just expect to accept it as the norm. Because what we've noticed, and we've seen it with rural isolation, and the whole country saw it through lockdown, exactly what that's like. You know, even just talking, using this month to, I don't know, reignite friendships or to reach out to someone, you know, in a way, that's, you're part of mental health awareness, because you might be helping them and maintain their good mental health, or yourself. Do you know what I mean? So it's not always necessarily, you know, someone who is in a very, you know, who's suffering badly with the mental health reaching out. That's incredibly important. But it's about maintaining it and you know, looking after ourselves as best we can.
Yeah, I suppose when we talk about mental health, we talk about all the aspects of mental health. So that's the good, the bad, the in-between. It's really about well-being. Unfortunately, we only seem to talk about mental health when it comes to mental illness. Mm. But it's a bit like maintaining your fitness, your physical health. It is something that you need to work on every day. And it's about staying well. It's much easier to stay well and put those little efforts in every day. We work on the principle of the 5 ways to well-being, and they're 5 very simple, practical things that you can do every day to maintain your well-being. And as you said, connection's a huge one. It doesn't have to be going out on a weekend with your friends. That's not for everybody. It could be as simple as meeting up for a coffee, sending someone a text. In this day and age, we often feel that we need a reason to meet up with someone. We need a reason to reach out. Just send that text. I guarantee that your friend or whoever you're texting will be delighted to hear from you. And I suppose the other few things around the well-being, 5 ways for well-being, is being active. We know that being active is extremely good for your mental health. And that doesn't mean climbing Muckish or Errigal. It means going out for the 10-minute walk. We're very lucky in Donegal that we have lots of beautiful nature. Go to the local beach, go to the forest, get out. You don't have to walk miles. Cleaning the house, little things, more movement.
Because there's
loads of things that we can do.
And there's loads of stuff out there as well. And obviously I recognise it can depend on people's mobility or access to transport. But, you know, over when we talk about things like this, we get contacts from, I don't know, men's sheds. Do you know what I mean? Where they're so welcoming and you just call in and there's not, you know, there's no inquisition. You just go in and you join up and you enjoy it. There's walking groups, there's poetry groups, there's art. There's something for everyone out there. And you might actually be surprised that it's very close to you in your area. So just talking to that point about interacting with people, maybe the local pub and post office has closed, but there is other stuff there. If you just take that first step and see what local groups or organisations are in your area and build your friendships and relationships that way. You're also, as an organisation, obviously, you know, celebrating what we're good at, which is helping each other. If someone reaches their hand out in this country, we generally are there to take that hand and to help them, but also to keep the pressure on the powers that be to ensure that, you know, when someone does look for some support, that those supports are there. There's many aspects to this month-long campaign, Marie.
Yeah, so we've got lots of things going on. We are launching a booklet for women on the menopause and how that impacts on people's mental health. We don't talk enough about things like that, but it affects so many women and men as well, are indirectly impacted. We're working with workplaces. We have a free e-learning module that is for managers and workplaces around embedding mental health and well-being into your workplace. We've got events all over the country. And just sharing messages on social media. You don't need to necessarily go to, like, if you're struggling or you want to reach out, like, as you said, the men's shed, I'm pretty sure most people don't talk about their mental health at the men's shed, but it's hugely beneficial for their mental health. We're not necessarily go out and telling people that you have to focus solely on the conversation of mental health. Connecting, no matter what you talk about, is beneficial. Getting active, taking up a hobby, joining your local community group, volunteering, all those things are beneficial for your mental health, and you don't necessarily, you're probably already doing it and you don't realize. And I guess for us, we want looking after your mental health to be as natural as brushing your teeth in the morning, something that you do without thinking. And we're getting there, but we still have a long way to go.
Yeah, and there's loads of resources and information on the website, World Mental Health Month. -mhi.ie. Plenty of resources there. That's the Mental Health Ireland's website. It is indeed. And as I say, you know, lots of little things can have that ripple effect and you know, just get us to a better place, get everyone to a better place, Marie, as much as is possible. You understand where, what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. We have a few events coming on, happening over the month in Donegal.
Go on, talk to us about them. Go through them.
Okay, so we have our development officer, Bill Vaughan, who will be heading out to Arnmore tomorrow to talk to the people out there about health and well-being and how they can mind their mental health. On the 12th of October, he will be going to Tory Islands. So we're getting all the islands in. On the 12th of October, we also have events for that's being held by the Intercultural Platform for Migrant Men. That's on the 12th of October in Trinity Hall. And then on the 22nd of October, I'll be holding a fundraising walk for Mental Health Ireland on the Muckish Railway Walk, just outside of Cuisla. And everyone is welcome to come along to that. We'll have lots of information about mental health on the day. We're going to be connecting with each other, walking in nature and just getting a bit of fresh air.
Lovely. Sounds great. OK, Marie, thanks very much for your time this morning. I do appreciate it and have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Marie Duffy there, Communications Officer with Mental Health Ireland. Now, LGBT Ireland have launched a new campaign aimed at empowering, supporting LGBTQI plus people in Donegal ahead of National Coming Out Day, which is on Wednesday, the 11th of October. It's entitled Empowering Anthems. Adam McBride is Head of Services and Engagement Programmes at LGBT Ireland. Good morning to you, Adam.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Good, good, good. Talk to us about National Coming Out Day and its importance, stroke significance.
So National Coming Out Day celebrates the experience of coming out for members of the LGBTQI plus community. So coming out can be very difficult. It can be a very stressful time for people. There's always that fear of rejection, but there's also very positive elements of coming out where people feel like they can feel very empowered and that they've taken ownership of their own life. So it's kind of celebrating that, but also to raise awareness of the difficulties that can face members of the community in coming out. And I suppose to let them know that we're there.
Are we
support them
moving forward, progressing, or is there some regression now for members of the community?
Ireland definitely was moving forward and progressing very well around human rights and also just around the kind of felt sense of being safe to, I suppose, walk down the street holding hands with your partner. In recent years, though, we have definitely seen some bit of a regression around it. My colleague, Padraig Rice, our head of policy, delivered an address to the Oireachtas recently in relation to the Year of Hate of 2022. So there was a lot of hate crimes against members of our community in 2022, some of which obviously were very extreme and have definitely had an effect on the community and how we feel in relation to safety.
Yeah, and some of them too are, it's kind of peculiar in that communities aren't even almost able to grieve as some of these, and particularly their horrific murders, end up being weaponized in some way or other, you know, in pitching certain groups against others. It's a strange space we found ourselves in, if you understand what I'm trying to say sensitively, Adam.
Yes, we've definitely found ourselves, I think, in a place where certain members of our community and certain people within our community are being used, I suppose, to try and pit us against each other, which, of course, we don't want. And the community as a whole stands firm together. So, yes, it is very difficult to, I suppose, negotiate some of that.
Yeah. Now, what is the how do people engage with this, particularly on the social media, the hashtag and all that type of stuff? Tell us about that.
So the idea of this is to ask people, so we know that music is really important to a lot of people, and we're asking allies and members of our community to select their empowering anthem, so something that makes them feel good, makes them feel motivated and empowered, and to share it on social media with the hashtag Empowering Anthems. So we've got a couple of different well-known personalities who have been engaged in it so far. So that includes Brendan Courtney, Shane Daniel Byrne, and Sonia Lennon. And we'd just like people to share their song and make a donation to LGBT Ireland. And shared across Instagram, Twitter, and the other social media. Sorry, I said Twitter, X. And
maybe not there.
Maybe not there. Yes, maybe not there these days. Yes.
So no, but let's actually, it is important that people don't retreat. No, but you know yourself the way it is nowadays. Okay. So you hashtag empowering anthems posted across your social media. I think also it's important that others support as well. As part of it, be it a share or a like or whatever it might be, even if it's not something you feel directly affects you, because there's a bit of solidarity in there as well.
Definitely, yes. Like, our allies are so important to us and we really appreciate everything they do for us. Like, we wouldn't be where we are today if it wasn't for our allies. So we really appreciate and respect them. And within Ireland, I think the majority of Irish people are very supportive. So
for a very good reason, because a lot of people have a member of the LGBTQI plus community within their family. That's the majority, if the truth be told, not the minority. Have you picked your anthem yet?
I have, yes, but it's a very old-fashioned one. I haven't shared it yet, but so yes.
Do you want to save it for Wednesday?
Yeah, something like that.
You're not going to tell us?
Okay. It's Scarlett's independent love song, so I'm Scarlett playing it. But yes, that was right. Always my anthem when I was growing up.
God, you have to own it. You have to own it.
Yeah, I know. Right, empowering anthems. Stuff.
Okay, yeah, exactly. And there's a story. Lots of people have a story to accompany their choice. We look forward to listening to yours on Wednesday. So you can get more information where, Adam?
So you can get more information on LGBT Ireland's website. So that's lgbt.ie. And on our Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also, if somebody is looking to contact our services because they need to talk or they need support, they can call our national helpline, which is 1-800-929-539. And that's open the evenings and from 4 to 6, both weekend days. Yeah. So if anyone wants to contact us for support or just need to talk to someone. So that's an active listening service.
Brilliant stuff. All right. Thanks so much for joining us. I really do appreciate your time and have a wonderful day.
That's great. Thank you, Greg.
Take care of yourself. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
That is Adam McBride, Head of Services and Engagement Programme at LGBT Ireland, talking ahead of National Coming Out Day, which is on Wednesday, the 11th of December. A big thank you to our friends over at Kelly's. They sent over a lovely hamper. They always do beautiful things, but when I'm on air and I can smell croissants and the curly yolks, and I can't eat them because I've tried to eat one before during an ad break and it doesn't work. And I hope there's going to be some left by the time I'm finished. But we really do appreciate the gesture. Thank you so very much indeed to all the crew over at Kelly's. And thank you all for keeping us so busy on the phone lines. Lots of big stories today, not least that letter issued from GPs to the health minister as it relates to their concerns over services at Letterkenny University Hospital. You've been having your say in that regard as well, which is hugely important, as you know. We'll get to some of those and more before the end of the programme. The hospital, I think it's a disgrace that people with serious mental health issues who've been admitted to the mental health unit on numerous occasions still have to go through the ED first. I know someone like this who was sent home from the ED in a terrible state. They didn't check their history, only have to go again a week later because of a worsening in their condition. If anything would have happened to them in that week, the hospital would have had to be held responsible. Another, what about the people that come in with alcohol and drugs at the weekend? Never hear that mentioned, Greg. On a regular basis, security can't cope, not enough of them on. Gardaí can't always get up to the hospital when fights break out, especially at the weekends. It's the reason you wouldn't hear, we've discussed it on this programme, but the reason you might not hear it as much is because we sort of are driven sometimes by what the listeners say. If someone was in and they witnessed that, they come on, they talk to us. But I can tell you, it's certainly not something that's being suppressed in terms of talking about, just to be absolutely clear. Right, Jerry McMonagall is a member of Regional Health Forum, one of the Donegal reps on that. Jerry, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
I mean, it's hard to put into words how significant I think this intervention from 78 GPs in this county is, but it is significant.
I very much welcome their intervention, and I fully support the call for the minister to meet with them and Celda to discuss their serious concerns and their concerns that we've been raising for quite a while now. The ongoing crisis at the emergency department is totally unacceptable. And I know, and I have to say that the staff are trying their very, very best, but all the different pathways and interjections that they're making are not working great. And I'm really pleased to see that the GPs now are taking a stand on this. I mean, when you see what they're saying, is that the GPs are finding it increasingly difficult to send patients referring to the emergency department because of the ongoing crisis up there and the length of time patients are awaiting.
They don't have, the GPs don't have faith in the management team that are currently there. They don't believe that they can fix the problems. Do you agree with that?
I would go some way to agreeing with that. And I've said it in the past. Look, and this is not a personal attack on any of the management. I think it's just beyond them. The crisis is such. It's so large. There's been years and years of lack of investment. The health service that we need and deserve has outgrown the hospital and its capacity to deliver a proper healthcare service. So while the management there are trying their best, they're not going to be able to deliver the health service that we need with the resources that they currently have. So it's
but the
very,
health
very
minister, the health minister would say, "I gave them an extra $31 million last year. Where has that money gone? Things have deteriorated."
Yeah, and let's look and drill down into that and see where has that $31 million gone. There's been all sorts of increases, not least the whole thing around energy, increased wage demands. So how much has really gone into recruiting nurses, consultants, and ensuring that there's a proper health service being delivered?
But they would say also, they would say that...
And I've listened to the minister throughout all of these...
Of course, but I'll let you come back in there, Gerry, sorry. But they would say, the health minister might say, well, look, there are plenty of vacancies there. We've funded for extra nurses, extra consultants. And then the management would say, well, we can't recruit them. Well, maybe they can't be recruited because the situation is so poorly managed at the hospital that people don't want to go work there. Like I, I'm very uncomfortable saying that because I don't want this to come across as personal. But when the GPs say they don't have faith in management to fix the problems that exist, you can't ignore that either. You know, and if the health minister says, well, we've funded all these spaces, we've given you an extra $31 million and things are actually getting worse, you know, where does the buck stop eventually?
Yeah, and look, and we, you know, all the people personally who have the unenvious job of trying to run that health service up there, which has got certainly hasn't got the resources it needs to effectively give us the health service we need and deserve. And it's easy for the minister to throw it back, isn't it, onto the people on the ground who are trying very, very hard, and we have to say that. Although what I think, and I've asked the management at the hospital on a number of occasions to do this, is they stand up and say enough's enough and admit, you know, and say to the minister loudly and clearly, what you're giving us is not enough to deliver the health service that we require. So we get away from the personal attacks on individuals and we look at the service and how it's funded and how it's invested in. And over the years, there's been a serious lack of investment in Letterkenny University Hospital. Mm-hmm. Our population has grown. Our demands on the health service is growing. And what we need to do is grow Letterkenny Hospital. Mm. And we need an extension on our emergency department for a long time. Mm. We need more bed blocks built to facilitate the extra beds that are needed and the extra staff. It is crazy for us to think that keep doing the same thing and a change will come. It won't. It's only going to get worse. And that's where I have the difficulty with management. And that's what I would urge a management to do. They stand up and say, enough's enough. Mm. You need to reinvest and come and look at the difficulties that we're experiencing and invest further in the hospital.
Yeah. But surely there is stuff within the control locally to reform how the ED works. Something as simple as, you know, if someone is in there with a cut in a hand, that they're not sitting for 36 hours to get two stitches. Simple stuff like that. Are you saying that that's not within the gift of the management to put measures in place that will remove quite a number of people that, you know, maybe do need stitches or a quick scan or something to move them from that ED setting? Because at the moment, you've got people in there with minor injuries, you've got women potentially having a miscarriage. You've got cancer patients. You've got, you know, all going through those doors of the ED. You're of the view that management don't have the resources or the ability to work at least on that part of the hospital system.
No, I think they can do. And only a fortnight ago at the Regional Health Forum meeting, I had a motion again calling on SAILTA and indeed the HSE to really consider again, once again, a minor injuries clinic in Donegal. It's a need. It's one that you've just outlined the reasons why. And like, we have 9 primary care centres across the county, all state-of-the-art, all newly built within the last number of years, and some have just actually opened this year as part of the opening of them. But the unfortunate thing is that we are still down staff in each of those primary care centres. But they would be the ideal places where people with minor injuries would be directed to by GPs if and when the adequate and the necessary resources are put in.
Do you think the management could perhaps work on how people are discharged there so that when they are fit to go, when they have somewhere to go, that they are discharged rather than waiting for a day or hours and then to be discharged and thus tying up a bed? Could look at, not admitting someone for 3 days when they're not going to be able to get a scan until the Wednesday and they feel perfectly fine, they don't feel the need to be there? Do you not think management could work on things like that that would at least ease some of the pressures that are there? Because, it's not all the health minister's fault either.
No, it's not. But in fairness to management, they have been trying a number of initiatives. Unfortunately, the volume of people that's requiring healthcare service and hospital beds is higher than the hospital beds.
But do you think the management could go into the ED when someone's sitting there waiting on a scan and they're there at 7 o'clock in the evening and the staff to actually conduct that scan aren't back on duty to 8 o'clock the following morning to go out and say, look at, we actually don't have that scan, it's not up and running. So you're sitting there really waiting for people to sleep and then coming to work the following morning. Do you think management could be working on things like that as well?
Yeah, and look, and that there is a decision that needs to be taken by healthcare providers, doctors and nurses. I don't know if management would be able to give that direction, but I mean, they could give that direction to the medical staff that if there is a situation where someone is not going to get their scan until the next day and they're well enough to go home, then they should be directed to go home and come back the next day. Mm. But I'll say one thing about that as well, because I've had personal experience of this. I've been told to come back and given an appointment and a time to come back the next day for the procedure or the scan to take place, and having to sit from at the time they were told from 9 in the morning till the early hours of the next morning before they get into a bed.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, Greg, you need to be sure that when you tell a patient that they can go home and come back the next morning, and they'll be seen at the time that they're given that they are seen.
Do you think management need to give us a bit of explanation as why someone with a suspected miscarriage is going into the ED and not going straight into maternity, or why someone with a card who's a sick cancer patient, why they're being put into ED with a load of people with upper respiratory illnesses that if they catch could kill them? I mean, are those not things that we should be able to hope are addressed locally?
Yeah, and on just recent weeks, I've addressed some of them there, instance with hospital management in relation to cancer patients who are going in and have the card and then are staying long hours within a very sick emergency department setting and waiting to get a bed. I've been there, I've contacted the hospital about it, and this is how much of a crisis our health service is in. And yes, management need to take responsibility for some of that, but the buck stops at the very top, and the minister's been down and talked and talked, and several ministers have been down and talked and talked. But even you take a look at the diabetes patients, the length of time that we're waiting for proper care for diabetes patients in this county is disgraceful. The same with cancer patients. Our oncology unit is not fit for the amount of patients that we have. Our step-down service is not fit for the amount of patients that are stepping down out of the hospital beds into our community settings. So there's a lot of things wrong in our health service in Donegal, and it's a long time that the minister got up here and done something seriously
positive
about fixing that.
Right, okay, Councillor. Thanks very much for your time. I appreciate you accepting our invite. Councillor Jay McMonagle, who is Sinn Féin councillor and member of the Regional Health Forum, 086 60 25 000, WhatsApps and texts. And this is a story, obviously, we'll continue with tomorrow. And we've been very busy on the phone lines. LUH is a disgrace. The staff are doing their very best, but it's the management that needs to change. Our mum is nearly 89 and was in a couple of weeks ago. She says she never ever wants to go back to it. A shame on the management. They should step down or be chased. But of course, if you listen to others, they say the management's hands are tied, that this is a funding issue and the health service model and not necessarily a local management issue. Greg, it's hard to sit all them hours waiting to be seen in ED, but the hardest is small children all being sent through ED. Whoever made that decision, it's a disgrace. Children used to be all sent to paediatrics, floor C, not anymore. Hi, Greg. Relating to the ED problems, my husband works in the healthcare system, so has first-hand experience on this matter. He feels that the main cause of backup and delays are that the GPs are referring people unnecessarily to the ED service, therefore causing delays for those who really need treatment. Now, That claim has been made a couple of times as it relates to now docs sending people to the ED that don't need to be there, a GP sending people to the ED that don't need to be there. And I spoke to someone who's involved in that within the hospital. And I don't want to use the percentage off the top of my head, but they looked into that because I had read it out in a couple of messages. And the GPs aren't referring more people. You heard from Dr. McGuinness earlier on that that's kind of a little bit of a smokescreen, that it's not all about now doc and GPs referring people unnecessarily. Does it happen? I can't say it doesn't happen, but is that what the problem is? My information is from a very reliable source, is that that's not the issue, that the place isn't full of people that don't really need to be there because the majority are either treated and sent home or admitted into the hospital. Have a lovely day, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to the show, watching the programme. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Breslin's up next around the Northwest.